Welcome to Deer Talk Now. I'm Brad Rucks. With me today, we're going to talk real estate with Deer and Deer Hunting Properties President Jason Rickman. Jason, welcome to the show. It's
Thank
all
you.
About real estate. A lot of people don't know, so I want to go through this as a perspective, as a new guy. So we're going to do two scenarios. The first one, I'm young, right? I just got married, got a kid. You know, I don't have a ton of money in the bank. What would you recommend I look for?
Well, in that circumstance, I'd probably look for something that's maybe a smaller parcel, something that you could handle in your payments, something that maybe isn't that elite property that has building sites and water and waterfall and all that. I would look for something more that is a starter package, which could be, you know, swampland. Part swampland, part wetlands, something with a smaller acreage in that 20 acres, maybe up to 40, depending exactly what your budget's at. And that's usually a good starting place. And a lot of times there's a ton of improvements you can do to that property, which will allow you to get some equity, right? So it's just like a house, right? You find that tear down or almost tear down, and you're putting in new floors and you're painting and you're doing a new roof and siding and all that stuff, so that in 5 years from now, you can sell it and get some equity out of it. Same thing for that land. You know, you're looking for something that you can put some sweat equity in to get equity out in 2 to 5 years.
So it's literally, it is just like that starter house, right? Everybody buys their first house. It's not their dream house, right? It's not.
Right.
But they're taking steps to get there, and it's the same process with hunting land.
Oh, for sure.
Oh. It's even better now.
Oh, yeah, I can hear him in both ears.
All right. So it's exactly the same as a starter house, right? Nobody moves into their first house as their dream house. They're just going to take steps until they finally achieve their goal.
Exactly. I mean, I've done it personally. My first property was swamp, right? It was, hey, some years you might need hip boots to go get your buck, right? So I started out there, and as years gone along, my dreams have changed, and they've grown, and they got bigger and bigger as they've gone. But I was able to find a property that I could afford with my budget and be able to establish things in there and grow things that then it became worth more, too, for the next buyer. So it's the same. I always compare the two to houses. It's a perfect way to scenario.
Okay, first thing, so I bought one of these small properties. What would you recommend I do as a very first thing? What would, as to try to improve it, improve the value, what would I do first?
I personally would probably try to establish a trail system, right? For myself as a hunter or whoever is hunting, and also to establish what the deer corridors are. And that's where I would start with my first property.
And keep in mind, with a trail system, not necessarily do you have to sell it to another buyer that's a deer hunter, right? I mean, because people like to go through the walks through the woods. They like to take their dogs to the woods. They just like to roam through the woods. So now I got that established trail system. It's good for anybody to use that would purchase that product.
Absolutely. A lot of people just think everybody is a big buck hunter. But the truth is, there are some real big buck hunters, and then other ones just want to enjoy it year round, and they want their family to enjoy it. They want their wife or their significant other to enjoy that property. So putting that established trail system in there allows them to do those walks in the fall or in the spring or in the summer, right? And it's good for four-wheeling or biking or whatever it might be. But yes, nowadays it's not all about just shooting monster bucks. It's about shooting some bucks, you know, whatever their comfort is, but also being able to do other things.
Yeah, I also love water. I like to put a little pond in it, something big enough that you can swim, right? But it has fish in there, so now I can take the kids fishing. You're guaranteed, there's not a bad day in a pond, right? You're going down there, it's full of perch, bluegills, whatever. You throw a bobber in there, and they're going to catch fish. So it's a perfect option as well.
I love that idea, yeah. And for kids, we know they can get a little antsy, including some adults we've all met.
Oh,
but
yeah,
that pond, when it's loaded up with fish, that's the way to make some memories on that small parcel.
And as a hunter, if you're on a small, I'm just giving you guys a recommendation. If you have a small piece of property, really pick and choose your dates, right? I mean, just don't pound it everything of the day of the season, because those deer, even if you have a family group of does living on it, if you put too much pressure, they're not going to live on it. So you want to hold those does. And even if it is all does, then kind of hold off till the rut. I mean, because it's going to suck in some bucks and you're going to have your opportunity. So really look at those, you know, peak seasons. So let's say we sold that piece of property. Okay, we sold our 40. What's the next thing, you know, as a progression? What should I be looking for? What do you think I could do?
You know, that next parcel is probably going to be, you know, from 40 acres up to 100 acres, you know, maybe 80 acres. But it's not even just about the acreage. It's what that acreage has to offer, right? So now we're probably getting into the parcel that has ag land on it, or the opportunity for food plots, stuff like that. The timber is going to be a little higher dollar value. It's actually maybe worth something, right? More established, aged, it's older. So that's something we're looking for, but it's going to have a little bit of everything at that point. You might even find a building site or a very small building site at that point, but that's really that next step, you know? And from what I've seen, that's probably the most gradual, and a lot of people will stay there at that stop, and they'll be very happy with that parcel.
Oh, yeah, 100 acres. Even in my neighborhood, a lot of neighbors don't have that much ground, and they pound the snot out of it, but they love their ground, which is great. So I want to take it one step a little bit back. So we had that 40 acres. Now I want to get to 100. I don't have enough cash, you know, to pay for the whole thing. Real estate, like when I go to the bank loan, well, give me the process.
So, you know, and I tell all of our clients, hey, you know, go get a couple different opinions. Important to get a couple different opinions. I try to look for that financial institution that knows hunting, right? Or a lender that knows hunting, that they're a hunter, right? Because they're also going to go to bat for you. If you're maybe pushing the envelope on something financially where, hey, I can make it, but the bank's like, well, tell me a little bit more about this property, right? Well, exactly why do you need this? So I first will always try to find somebody that has knowledge in our field. And number two, I try to look for the ones that maybe give us a little leeway on the down payment, right? A lot of times they're going to require 20 to 25% down, right? But some of these places will even allow 10% or 15%, something that kind of allows some extra cash in your pocket to maybe do some of those improvements. So I'll even try to talk to the lender and say, hey, I know what it's at now, but this is what it can be. And if I do that, here's the equity that's going to be involved, right? And they do love that. That's very important to them to see, like, hey, this is just not a piece of land that's not going to be used and it's going to go down in value either, right? So if you can show them, but probably the most important thing is if you have land, if you can buy land that either a farmer will farm and pay you some money for the acreage, that shows some income, which will then offset that cost in a lender's eye and might allow you to afford a little bit nicer, or CRP or some type of income producing on that property will up your budget in the minds of a lender.
Which makes sense. Yes. The more cash you have or coming in, the less payments you're going to make. Plus, it just increases the value down the road if you ever want to sell it, right? I mean, if you already got a CRP contract on that farm, you know what kind of funds you're going to get in. Or if you already have established long-term tenant farmer that's renting it, you know what you're going to get. So it goes a long, long way.
Absolutely. And some people forget about the timber value. A lot of times there's some mature timber on there that needs to be harvested. You can get a quote on that, and you can use that in some lending institutions will actually look at that when they're putting your whole package together for your loan.
Okay, now let's go to the ultimate. Like, what would you say as a hunter, and say I have two kids and maybe a couple friends I take out, what would you recommend for a hunting, you know, my house is going to be out and I'm going to live right there. How much ground would be the optimal for what I want to use it for?
Any budget? I mean, obviously we want to go way up there in acreage, but I think 200 acres, if you're at that 200 acre mark with water, with ag, with not only nice timber, but you have great bedding areas, I think that's about the ultimate acreage in my mind.
I would agree, because you put a house on that and you're probably, you know, this day and age, you could be looking at anywhere from, what, $750,000 to $1 million, depending on the house, maybe even more. So, you know, it's a nice little investment, but it's still at that level, right? Because you go higher in that, now you just eliminated a lot of buyers, right? You go into the $1.5, $2 million places, and there's not a lot of people that are cash. You know,
like less than 1% of the population. So that really cuts down on your buyer pool, which obviously for a seller that can mean a long time on the market, or you're just waiting for that one individual that can afford it. So Yeah, 200 acres would be mine.
Okay, so that's the guy that really wants to invest right in properties and just continue to get his ultimate goal. Now we're going to talk about investment. Say I'm an investor because land is going through the roof, right? Yes. So buy now, hold on for a couple of years. What kind of strategies can you give a person for buying and selling land?
Well, personally, I've done some land flipping, I guess you would call it, and investing. So what I look for is a large parcel with lots of different access points off of the road, so that I can divide it, right? So, for example, I had like a 120-acre parcel that I was able to divide three different ways, along with a house I won. So the house was like 15, 20 acres, and then I parceled off the other two. I was able to go from, let's say, $3,000 an acre to now I can sell it for $5,500 to $6,000 an acre without really having to do anything to the land.
Nice.
Just by dividing it, right? So the smaller the parcel, typically the bigger the dollar per acre, right? And the bigger the buyer pool for those smaller parcels because of the dollar value. So that dollar value is less, you have more buyers, you're going to drive up that price. Versus large parcels, that dollar per acre can go lower because less buyers, right?
Yep.
So I always tell buyers that are just looking for investing, and some that maybe don't want to, you know, flip it, but they just want a long-term hold, then you're looking for, hey, I'm not a hunter, but I want to invest in it, or I might hunt once in a while. Hey, is there an outfitter that would lease it from me? Are there individuals, hunters, that would lease it from me so I can get that, you know, investment in cash flow from the hunter? And then you have, of course, the ag side of things, right? Or yep. CRP. So I'm looking for those avenues to get my rate of return higher, right? But as far as, you know, maybe cutting some parcels out, I definitely want to look for that road frontage, a bigger parcel that I can now shrink into smaller parcels so I can drive up that dollar per acre.
Which makes sense, right? Because if it's got the road frontage, you have easy access. You don't have to worry about any kind of, you know, entryways, because it's all right there. You can add anything you want as long as it has that road frontage. And you know where my place is. I mean, we all have tamarack swamps, and it doesn't have any easements.
Right.
I mean, basically, we had a landlocked 40 that was a neighbor's that we could dictate who he sold it to, because
exactly.
We had the only way to get into it easy,
yeah.
And we ended up buying it. So you want to avoid those kind of situations.
Agreed. So road frontage is very important. Even if you're just buying an 80-acre parcel or 40-acre parcel, when you're dealing with easements, you're going through other people's land. Sometimes there's conflict, unfortunately. A walking easement is probably the worst case scenario, because it's not like the old days when we were trekking through those swamps. You know, a lot of people want to take the four-wheeler back there. They want to take the UTV. They don't want to walk, right? So those factors can definitely lower the price of your acreage.
Yep. The other thing I always tell people is that look for the areas, you know, try to become familiar with the area that you're going into, right? I mean, because some areas are known for big deer, some deer, you know, locations are not. Or even in our area, it's kind of touristy in the summer, right? So you have a potential, if you want to do an Airbnb or any of that other stuff, you have potential if you're in some of these touristy areas or in a high, you know, big buck area, it's going to be more valuable.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and some people, you know, like when I purchased my property here, I looked at what was around me and what my property could be, right? So, and then I made those improvements, and now it's getting exactly where I want to be, where there's big buck that are cruising through there now, not just the dreams of them, right?
Yeah.
So, but I also looked for, I had a property on there that I could rent out, so to help offset the cost of that property. So yes, when you're investing in that, look for, hey, there's a lot of water around me. There's a lot of lakes. A lot of people want to stay. Maybe there's some big festivals. You know, obviously you have your holiday weeks.
Yep.
You look for those so that when you do VRBO it or Airbnb it, you can make max dollar off of it.
The last thing about land, it seems like it's an emotional thing, right? You become so attached that you don't want to sell it. You almost have to look at it a commodity, right? I mean,
yeah, the number one fault of a seller, including all of us, is thinking our property is the best and it's better than everybody else's, right?
Mine is.
Exactly. And mine is too, right? So the hardest thing is that emotion and overcoming that emotion for a seller. So that's probably the first thing we really go over is like, hey, I know you have 20 years of memories on this property, and there's a reason why you're moving on from this property. We want to make sure the next buyer loves it as much as you, and we definitely are all on the same team, and we want to get you max dollar, but it hurts us if we think ours is worth gold and it's worth silver, right? Yeah. So it sits on the market, and I always use this analogy. You know, if I really want this truck, and I go to my local dealership, and the semi's pulling up with that truck and it's just coming off, and I know there's other people in that showroom and they're like, hey, they're looking at that truck too. I know I'm not getting one penny off of that truck. That truck, I'm paying whatever they tell me I'm paying. But if I go on that dealership lot and I see that truck in the corner and I see on there it's been on their lot for a year, I know I'm getting money off, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing, same analogy for land. We want to put on a price on there that your property doesn't sit there, because people are going to start asking, well, why doesn't anybody want it, right?
Yep.
And what's wrong with the property? There must be something wrong with it. And I've seen very good properties that an agent, unfortunately, from another real estate company that overpriced, and that's what happens. And then they get these lowball offers. And that's not what we want for our sellers, for sure.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, you got to give the person real expectations, what it's worth. And, you know, make him understand why, right?
Absolutely.
As you said, like, I'm very attached to my own ground. And literally, it's been in the family for a long time. We expanded on it a little bit. Will I ever sell it? I don't know. I'm not as attached to it as I was anymore, because I would love to have hard ground, right? I mean, mine's all tamarack swamps with a little bit of high ground here and there. But we've hunted it for years, and I know how to hunt it, so it's super easy. But some of the time, it is fun to get on a new piece of ground and learn it.
I mean, absolutely.
You've done it now in, what, Missouri,
Illinois, Wisconsin, yeah.
And it almost, you know, gets you fired up more to hunt again, because it's understanding that game. And every piece of property is unique. I don't care which one it is, and how you've hunted a place that was exactly like it before. Your deer are going to move differently depending on the place. So it's figuring out that deer movement.
Absolutely. I think you hit it on the head. That excitement of that new property just rejuvenates you. I mean, sitting in the same bow stand for 20 plus years, as I'm sure you've experienced.
Oh, yeah.
I know I have. You know, it does. It's like, okay, I kind of know what's coming out every year. And when you get in that new property, the excitement developing that property, I think it's refreshing. I think, you know, and it was hard to do, but I've learned to do that and get unattached from your property.
Deer Talk Now is brought to you by GameHide. At GameHide, the philosophy is pretty simple. Design the best products with the best fabrics and features to help you be more successful in the field. While doing this, they strive to keep their pricing moderate to give you the best value in the hunting clothing industry. I wear the Elimitic line of clothing to keep those nasty ticks off of me, and I absolutely love it. Check them out at GameHide.com.
I'm going to give you one more. So it always amazes me, like, you have these little cul-de-sacs and they're selling lots, right? And they're getting buku dollars. Me, I would rather take that exact same money. I don't care if I can buy just 10 acres out in the country, put a house on it. It's if you got the right 10 acres with a little bit of woods on it, I can still go out there and deer hunt, or I could do squirrel hunting or whatever. I don't understand why people want to be so close to the city when there's so many other locations where you could get a little chunk of land. Explain that to me. What's your thought process?
I see it a lot with people that just need to be close to the conveniences, right? So that's more of why you see people buying the subdivision. Now, I have noticed the last couple of years, more and more people are trending to get out of the city or the suburbs. And hey, maybe it's a 35-minute drive, but I can unwind now. I get home. I have 10 acres, 8 acres, 12 acres, whatever it is, I can go hunt out the back door. It's the relaxation. Maybe they establish a pond on there. I've definitely seen that trend start going that way. And to be honest, some of these lots in these subdivisions, you could buy 5 acres all day long and get way more bang for your buck, in my mind, of what you can do with that land.
Yeah, and then you don't have all the covenants, right? I mean, because when you build a house in these locations, they have all these rules. You probably can't even build the house that you wanted to build.
Right, or pole shed. You know, now people have more toys than I've ever seen, right? And having that pole shed or just a little getaway to be able to work on things, That's big. And so, yeah, I've been seeing that trend for that 5 to 10 acre parcel with some woods on it. So they can go out, and maybe they're not a huge hunter, but hey, I just like to go sit out in the fall and watch nature, if nothing else. And if a nice buck goes by, I shoot it, you know?
Great. So you mentioned like outside storage sheds, pole sheds. Does that really add enough value to warrant? So I got that 40 acre property with a house on it, small house. Yeah. It's my first place ever. Would it be, you know, behoove me to put up a pole shed as well for a little additional storage? Would that enhance? Say I spend $15,000, would I get more out of it by having that on there or not?
Yeah, it's always a slippery slope, right? So we tend to build what is good for us, right? Yeah. And a lot of times we kind of tailor it too much to what we need or want, and the next 8 buyers don't need or want what we did. So yeah. So it can actually backfire on you. You know, I love a blank slate, you know, or a very standard pole shed, something sure. that people can maybe add or subtract to. I think it's important as a buyer or a seller to just recognize that. You know, when I work with sellers, I remind them, hey, you built this for what you needed. Now, the next buyer might not need all those extra stuff, so it might be tough to get the full value out of it. But for the right person, somebody that's identical thinking as you are, then it's perfect because they're going to save the time and the money of building it now where that cost might be higher. So a pole shed already established on there isn't like a bad thing. It's just when you start to get where it's very specific for that seller, that becomes a negative in some cases. Well, right?
And we've all seen some of the elaborate pole sheds that are
that
are very, very well done. That's not what I need. All I need is something for my toys, my boats, my ATVs, tractors, you name it. I'm good.
Yeah. So. And it's the same thing with houses, right? We built it specifically for our needs. The next buyers don't need as big of a master or want a bigger master, or, you know, they don't need a walker, or they do want to. So, you know, I could just differ from buyer to buyer, right?
Yep. Now, I know you're not a genie, so you might not know the answer to this, but, you know, land values have seemed to be skyrocketing, right? Where do you see the future? What's it going to happen? Where do you see it going?
Well, history of real estate always kind of trends up and down, right? You go through those cycles, you're up and then you're down. Interest rates, you know, stock market, all these things tend to balance that out. You know, over time, land value really never dips. I don't see any major dips where a housing market definitely can dip. So, you know, and a lot of very, very wealthy people that have done very well in the real estate world absolutely believe that's the number one commodity to go through recessions, you know, in bad times and good times. And I definitely am on board with that. I personally try to invest my money in land and over a stock market that can go up or down. I feel like over time, that's probably the safest thing you could invest your money in that I've seen. And a lot of people that I've worked with that have invested in 30, 40, 50 years of real estate, they've proven that.
Oh, yeah. Very well off. I mean, I know a lot of people in the hunting industry, when a particular state would just start skyrocketing, Illinois, Iowa, you name it, and they just bought and sold, and they did it a few times, and next thing you know, you know, it's well past the seven figures, you know, that they're into. So it's kind of interesting. It's a great philosophy. And here in Wisconsin, I can remember when our neighbor, one of them moved in and he spent $1,000 an acre and we thought he was nuts. And look where it is now. You know what? You know, up by Tigerton, when we had Tiger Ridge, this goes back 15 to probably 17 years ago. Man, they were selling that for like $2,500 an acre after we got done with it. And I thought they were nuts. And now it's going for $7,000. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was, even if you're a long-term investment, that's a great investment long-term.
Yeah. Buffalo County. I mean, there's another prime example of getting in that $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 an acre. I mean, and I hear the stories of what they bought it for 20 years ago. It's insane. And I look at this. I like to touch my money, and by touching my money, I'm out hunting, I am harvesting trees, deer, whatever, I'm putting in food plots. I like to be able to see my money use with myself or my friends coming out versus the stock market. So I'm a big fan of land and owning as much property as possible.
I would agree with you. Now, let's say one last thing. How do you choose on an agent? I mean, like, it's got to be a personal kind of opinion, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I always tell people, you know, find somebody that you're comfortable with, right? So the number one thing I've seen for mistakes for listings that I've taken over because their previous realtor didn't work out is number one, they maybe just put a yard sign in their yard and that's all they did, right? And there's no communication. They didn't, you know, touch base with them. Like, I'm a big proponent. Even if I have nothing going on your land, I'm still going to reach out to you with whatever we establish in the beginning, once a week, twice a week, just to let you know, hey, this is what's going on. Hey, this marketing isn't seeming to pull the buyers for you, so we're going to switch to this marketing, right? And you know, find somebody that hunts, right? That number one thing I see is you have a buyer agent that's working with somebody or a listing agent that doesn't hunt and doesn't understand the true value of your property, or gets a buyer into a spot where they overpaid for something because they thought all land is equal and it's not. And the same thing on the sales side. So, you know, find somebody that you can relate to, that has a great personality, that is attentive to you, but understands what you're trying to accomplish and understands hunting.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, that's basically it for today. Guys, I learned a ton. I mean, real estate's going to continue to grow. I believe wholeheartedly it's one of the best investments between hunting properties and lakefront properties. I mean, that says it all right there. The housing market's going to be boom and bust with the interest rates, but I don't think you're going to see that much drop on the hunting side, because I thought it was going to happen multiple times in any other state.
It just never does.
And it never does. It never does. I can remember when one of my friends called that had 440 acres in Iowa and he wanted me to buy it for $1,000 an acre, and I didn't have 400, you know, that much in cash. And it sold for, I want to say, almost $5,000 an acre just a little while ago. So there's my mistake in life right there. Welcome to, or thank you for visiting Deer Talk Now. I'm Brad Rooks. This is Jason Rickman. Hopefully we answered all your real estate needs.